This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO at 100.5 FM.
The sight of massive marches of young and old, students and workers, parading through the streets of Montreal week after week and month after month, now may be faint memory for some, like the fading sounds of rhythmic beating of pots as people stood on their balconies to cheer on the demonstrators. In the end, the Liberal government of Quebec lost their battle with the students and were defeated in the election they desperately called. Yet it seems they still want to taste revenge. For what else explains their effort now to persecute the young, resolute, and capable student leader Gabrielle Nadeau-Dubois? To analyze the legal attack on Gabrielle, we've contacted Richard Fidler. He's a retired lawyer. He's a translator, and he's a blogger of the site Life on the Left. Greetings, Richard, and welcome back to Red Eye.
Pleased to be there.
Let's take a step back to May, the period of the strike. The students had held mass meetings, they had had lengthy discussions, and then they'd voted to go on strike to compel the provincial government to abandon its proposed tuition hike. The government responded to the strike with injunctions. Can you explain the government argument and, in turn, the student argument about those injunctions?
Yeah, so what happened, actually, it wasn't the government that took the initiative. It was a number of students brought injunction proceedings against the student strikers. It turns out that there was ample evidence that a lot of these injunction proceedings, if not all of them, had actually been initiated largely by actions of the Quebec Liberal students, members of the student, the youth, young Liberals of Quebec, who were supporters, of course, of the Charest government. And so they brought a total of about 25 injunction proceedings, and the courts were quite happy to comply with them, and so the courts granted injunctions to students, to individual students, which basically put severe restrictions on the picket rights of the striking students, and imposed the obligation on the professors to resume classes and prohibited the students from barring entry to the institutions, the colleges and the universities that were strike-bound. So there was a whole flurry of these in the first part of May. Seven of these injunction proceedings were actually issued by the Chief Justice of the Superior Court of Quebec. They were all identically worded, by the way, and they all basically treated the right to an education as a consumer right. And they said that the students were just individual consumers of a product, you know, college or university education, and they had no right to restrict access to that commodity by other consumers. So you had a position there that was very much consistent with neoliberal thinking, which is that education basically is just a commodity. The university students and the college students who were striking in great numbers, as you mentioned, had a quite different approach. They said that what we're doing is exercising our democratic right, as we had decided in mass assemblies, to hold a strike to support our demand against our opposition to the fee increase that was projected by the Liberal government, and in the case of the more radical students, for free education in Quebec. And they said that we are, as students, our student associations have legal recognition in Quebec law as bargaining agents and representatives for the students, and they are given a monopoly of representation on the students. It's an almost a constitutional right. It's a quasi-constitutional right, if you want. In the legislation in Quebec, which was adopted 30 years ago, it says that the provisions of that law prevail over any other laws that are contradictory. Now, clearly it was inspired by the kind of thinking that lies behind labor legislation. That is, that a union gets exclusive right of representation, and then, of course, they have the right to strike, but it tends to be, in labor law, very tightly restricted. You know, you cannot strike during the life of a contract. You have to grieve. If you are going to get to the end of a contract, you have to go through a negotiations, arbitration process, and so on. There's no such legislation in Quebec law, but the students were simply doing what they've done on eight other occasions since 1960, and that is to stage a general strike of the institutions to back up their demands. So that was happening. So you had a collective right being exercised by the students, but the courts refused to treat it as such. In fact, the judge in Gabriel Nadeau-Dubois' case said very flatly, there is no right to strike on the part of students. And instead, the courts treated it as an individual consumer right, you see. So you had sort of a right of commercial speech versus a right of free expression and to take action in defense of your right to free expression. So those were the sort of philosophical issues behind it.
Well, the government failed to intimidate the students with the injunctions, and so the government escalated to even more anti-democratic and repressive steps with bringing in the Bill 78, and initially that was the number. How did that bill affect the injunctions?
Well, what happened was, yes, as you say, the students just ignored the injunctions for the most part. So then in the late May, the government brought in the Bill 78, and it of course, put an end to the strike. It closed the institutions until August, and it said in August the students have to go back to school, the professors have to go back to work, and meanwhile, all the injunctions are suspended, but they made one exception, and this is where they caught Gabriel Nadeau-Dubois in Section 32 of the Act, which put an end to the strike, the Bill 78. They said that any judgment or order issued on the basis of these proceedings ceases to have effect as of the 18th of May. But they said, however, it does not. We've dropped the injunctions, but in relation to contraventions of an order issued before that date, no, those proceedings can still go ahead. Now, that was sort of the Gabriel Nadeau-Dubois clause, because there was only one prosecution underway at that point for disobeying an injunction or for urging disobeyance of an injunction, which is really the charge that was made against Nadeau-Dubois. So his case came up this fall, and on November the 1st, he was sentenced, or convicted, rather, of having violated the injunction.
Describe that judge's decision in terms of the language they used and the statements they made.
Well, the judge went far beyond, actually, the provision of the Code of Civil Procedure that was involved, which simply says that you are calling into question the authority of the law. He said, "Oh no, this is much worse." That he said that Nadeau-Dubois was advocating anarchy. He was encouraging civil disobedience. His comments could be used to pave the way to tyranny. And as a result of this conviction, Nadeau-Dubois, who's not yet been sentenced, faces a fine of up to $50,000 and possible imprisonment for up to a year. I should mention, by the way, that the conviction aroused a big wave of protest in Quebec, which is still going on. There is a website which supports Nadeau-Dubois, and they've raised already $95,000 from unions and various organizations and individuals throughout Quebec, and I think internationally as well, since, of course, the website's accessible anywhere in the world. And so there's a lot of support for him. They held there was a court hearing on November the 9th to hear submissions on sentence from both the prosecution and the defense. And the judge has not set a date now for issuing his sentence. So that's where that case stands right now. So as you can see, Nadeau-Dubois essentially was singled out for special treatment, and really all he had done was to question the injunctions in the principle of the thing. He did not actually address the specific injunction in question for which he's now being charged. And he said that The students were simply taking steps to enforce their democratic choice that was made to go on strike, he says, and they have to take the necessary steps to enforce the strike vote. It's a democratic question, and if that means picket lines, we think it's completely legitimate means of doing so. And those were the words which were used to convict him.
It's been well recognized that the student resistance had a wide impact on popular thinking in Quebec about neoliberalism in general and about democratic organizing in particular. There's been some discussion in the Quebec media recently about the stimulus that is had within unionized workers among unionized workers in Quebec. Could you give us a sense of that impact?
Yeah, it's hard for me to say. I'm based in Ottawa, and of course I'm not a member at this point of any union, though I have been in the past. There has been some discussion in the media. It's limited. There was a professor of labor relations at the University of Montreal who wrote an interesting article, which was an op-ed piece in Le Devoir, the daily newspaper in Montreal, in which he argued that the students had actually shown an example, a positive example for the trade union movement in Quebec, which tends to be quite conservative, like trade unions elsewhere in North America, and very much caught up in the in policing the contracts under the labor relations regime that we have. And he said that actually the he thought that the student strike was very similar to an earlier period in history in North America before the unions were given legal recognition in the post-war period, the post-Second World War period, when unions did not have necessarily a legal right to strike, but they went ahead and exercised it anyway, and they were much more militant. And he said, of course, since then they've fallen into these routines. But the students had shown an example which might help to inspire a renewal of trade union militancy and so on. And this was taken up in an interesting conference, which was reported in one of the alternative newspapers in Quebec recently, which was organized by the Montreal Council of the Quebec Labor Federation, the FTQ. And they had about 60 relatively young people, members of the unions, who came to discuss the question of more generally the question of whether will trade union renewal come from the new generation. But of course, the discussion, judging from the article, the discussion did reflect the impact of the events of the spring, and the author the reporter who was commenting on the meeting itself made that connection by saying that it looks as though the new generation is coming forward, having been among the strikers and so on, will have that experience fresh in memory when they encounter the trade unions and the way they function and the kinds of action they have to undertake. So, yes, there are some positive results, which we hope will inform and influence the actions of the trade unions and the way they operate in the coming period. So that was about the extent of it. It's hard to say. There are new actions projected, by the way, by the students coming up in the next period, and we may see a renewal sometime next year of the kinds of mass action that we saw earlier this year in Quebec. Next week, there's actually a series of demonstrations and strikes that are scheduled for Thursday, November the 22nd, throughout Quebec as part of an International Day of Mobilization, which has been initiated and is being organized in Quebec by the Association of Student Solidarity. And they have called a conference as well for December the 1st to 2nd of Quebec students to develop a common strategy to follow in the event of the education summit that's scheduled for or is planned to be held in the early next year in Quebec and so on.
Thank you very much.
Cheerio.
I've been speaking with Richard Fidler. He's a retired lawyer, a translator, and he writes a blog called Life on the Left.